exactly what's going to occur. He's going to have to go by the government first. But even if that did happen, even if you did get that, do people understand that Donald Sterling was already worth $1.5 billion? And that now if they sell this thing for $2 billion, that means that his family is going to have almost $4 billion to their name. We just watched the christening of the newest American dynasty in real time happening in front of the world. And black folk are actually trying to tell themselves that was a loss. Do you know how long it would take for the Clippers to earn $1 billion in revenue? One team. And do you know how long it would take for you to get that? And now the Sterling are able. Let me tell you something. They've been talking about Oprah Winfrey is worth. Net worth includes your brand name, which ain't nothing. Now, Oprah Winfrey has been, quote, worth $1 billion now since I was in damn me high school. That was 20 years ago. And her, quote, worth ain't moved. She was worth $1 billion then. She's actually worth less than that today, by the way. For those of you who didn't know, she's actually worth less. Donald Sterling bought the Clippers around the time that Oprah Winfrey got on TV with her talk show. Actually, it may have been at the same time she's actually. So he spent $12 million, and over 30 years, he's walking off with $2 billion. Oprah Winfrey was worth $1 billion 20 years ago, and now she's struggling to hold on to being worth that. Forget how much cash she can put her hands on. She has never been able to put her hands on $1 billion cash. Not now, not ever. But in any case, she's got, what, $300 to $500 million in the bank. She's got that in the bank that she can put her hands on, but that's all she's ever had. She doesn't have more than that. So her worth has actually gone down. Her assets, her bank account has actually gone down over the last 30 years. Donald Sterling's just blew through the damn roof. But since most black people can't follow the math, they're having a hard time being able to comprehend exactly what you just saw. Brother, we just witnessed the christening of a new American dynasty, right there with the Rockefellers, the Kennedys, Facebook. I mean, we just watched the newest one get christened. Black people are ready to rally in the streets for Dre, who ain't even going to have $1 billion when it's over, by the way. Just happy that he could help make Jimmy Iovine more filthy rich than Jimmy Iovine already is. And yet black folk think we've got something to celebrate over. And what's he going to do with that money when he gets it? We're celebrating if Andre Young for what? If he's not going to practice group economics, I don't see anything to celebrate. Steve Ballmer is going to buy that team, and a bunch of other folk, white and otherwise, are going to get rich off of that. Who's going to get any? Who has gotten anything out of what Dre has done? Oh, yeah, nobody. But we're damn sure ready to celebrate. Brother, they don't understand what they just really witnessed here. They don't really understand that we just watched a great, big, huge, wealthy baby be born.
Of course not. They were sleeping. And as usual, they're going to wake up, though, when white America tells them it's time for the final four. And what is the new Sterling dynasty going to do with their newly acquired power, wealth, and influence? What are they going to do? Well, one thing's for sure. How do you intend to lean on the Sterling dynasty now? You've already done the worst you could possibly do to him. You took away their little tour franchise and made him $2 billion richer. He's going to buy more real estate. They're going to buy more politicians. And by the time it's all over, in about another 30 years, they will have doubled their family's wealth. That's what's going to happen. That's the way it's going to go down. And you know what? It's hard for me to be too angry with the man because I don't blame a dog for barking. But I do blame our people for not understanding it. Don't waste your time. The lesson that was supposed to be learned from the Donald Sterling fiasco was, do not waste your time sitting there getting into fights with people when you're punching above your weight. You are way above your weight getting in the ring with this man. You were way above you. You were way above your weight, and you didn't even know it. And now what's happened is you thought that you got a technical knockout, and you looked up and realized you were the one flat on your back. That's the way it works. How does Professor Truth feel about Donald Sterling? The man's got power, wealth, and influence. Where do I get me some of that so that I can stop him from being able to do this kind of thing? I want some power, wealth, and influence, too. That's what I took away from it. As far as I'm concerned, black people, those of you who do get it, those of you who have made your voices heard with your support for the 7 a.m. Project, you guys are on the win team. Okay, Donald Sterling and his ilk win a couple of rounds, but the thing about it is they're not going to see this coming. They have no idea what we've given birth to here. They have no idea what is forming here. There's an old saying in the U.S. Navy, run silent, run deep. Do you know what Cold War, American submarine captains with their new nuclear-powered subs, they had the ability to sneak up on Soviet submarines because the Soviet subs had diesel engines and they were very noisy. They could hear the Soviets, but the Soviets couldn't hear them. And the American captains would often get right behind Soviet subs and trail them for nautical miles, just miles underwater, just trailing them, not doing anything, just trailing them, following them. And then after they amused themselves, you know, we could have put some torpedoes up their butts by now, some of the more adventurous American captains would turn on the sonar boot, where they turn on their sonar ping, you know, that boom sound. And when they did that, the Soviet sub would immediately turn the heck around. Like, who the world was that? Because only one thing sounds like a sonar ping. But, of course, a sub is a big machine, and it takes time to make it do a 180-degree turn. And by then, the American sub was already gone. That's called running silent and running deep. That's the reason why American submarine captains were so confident, at least during the Cold War, they were so confident that they could win even a nuclear war against the Soviets, because most of the Soviets' nuclear arsenal was on board their subs, and the American captains were like, we've already practiced 20 and 30 years how to track those submarines. We could sink them without the Soviets even realizing that half their submarine fleet was on the bottom of the ocean. While the American captains, they would get as close to the Soviet Union as military doctrine would allow, and with their silent subs, they could just sit there and listen. Listen to Moscow radio. They could listen to what the Soviets thought were their coded broadcasts. They could listen to the main Soviet fleet. They could just listen there, just sit there. It's like, man, we could sink, we could obliterate Moscow, Vladivostok, and any other city we want, and the Soviets wouldn't know it till it was all over. That's called running silent and running deep. Now, the reason that I bring that up to you is, yes, we are at war. That's why I use so many military analogies. And the blackchannel.net and the B-1 Brigade has proven we have learned the lesson. We get it. We understand it. We have managed to blow the doors off the previous goals that have been set, set new goals and exceed them. And while everybody else is sitting out there complaining about a lack of power, those of us who understand how power moves are actually exercising it. Now, the thing is, right now, this happens to be a really delicious moment because the Black Authority knows what's coming. Professor Truth knows what's coming. And those of you, the B-1 Brigade, the Intelligent Black Society faithful, you know what's coming. But our enemies, they have no idea what's about to waylay them when Intelligent Black Society plants its flag in the very heart of the evil empire. A lot of other people out there couldn't even bother to. They didn't have the vision. They didn't have the gumption. They weren't willing to stick their necks out. That's where people like you come in. In order for us to fight this, people who are not merely listening, but the people who are doing, you have done that. You stepped up. And in the event that an accurate history of the African diaspora in America is written, May 18th, 2014 will be remembered as the definitive turning point because for the first time, for the very first time since Marcus Garvey, a group of motivated black people turned anger into action. And you can pretty much hear the ancestors applauding their children and going, finally, some of you have gotten it. Finally. You think about some of these other, you know, so-called Kickstarters and fundraisers and other stuff done by other people who had all the media attention in the world and could not do what it is that you, the B1 Brigade, have done. What does that tell you? What it tells me is society is real. Intelligent black society is real serious. And it also tells me that when you guys get behind something, it's going to win. Those of you who are listening to this, you're part of the winning team. You are part of the winning team. Yeah. Donald Sterling and his ilk, we already knew that they were going to win one or two rounds. But you know what? This game is going into extra innings. We're going into overtime. And the game ain't over until we win. Until we win. Black society's time is now. The coonery and the coons and buffoons backed up by the dominant society, they've had their day. They had their run. And this is pretty much about as far as coonery could take. Now it's our turn. Now it's our time. And yes, for a lot of people, they're not going to like what we have to say because we're not like that old generation. We're not looking for an even hand. We're looking for the upper hand. We are not looking to be part of a group. We're looking to lead this thing. And we make no apologies for that. Because the future is uncompromising, and the future begins right here, right now, with you. It begins with intelligent black society. It begins with the people who don't wait to be called. It begins with the ones who are rushing to the front lines. You guys have run over the barricades and the ramparts of the enemy, and you have made your presence felt. And I could not possibly be prouder to share company with you. Because I was just like you. I watched a lot of this nuttery going down, sitting here going, man, where are the intelligent black people at? You know, why can't we see them? You know, we're just, you know, you got Russell Simmons out there with the Harriet Tubman sex tape and all. You know, where's intelligent black society? We're taking this lying down? No. There's a difference between lying down and lying in wait. Intelligent black society is going to strike when and how it's to our benefit. And when we drive that dagger of truth into the enemy's heart, he's not going to be taken to the hospital to be patched up. It's going to be DOA. It's going to be DOA. Intelligent black society is not looking for victory. Intelligent black society is looking for dominance. Why? Because that's what power is. I want the day and age to come when Donald Sterling's children will be sitting there going, can you believe what intelligent black society did? And we can't do anything about them. And man, we can't even lean on them. And they just seem to be running the boards. Yeah, because the children of Africa will have power. And they're not going to be dependent on any white power brokers to give it to them. They will have acquired it on their own, and they will wield it for their own benefit. And they will not apologize just because it's going to step on some toes and make some people uncomfortable. Because the whole point of having power is your comfort, not someone else's. You don't need to make any apologies for that one. You know, TBA, the last probably year and a half, we've seen a number of black people who have fallen and a number of black people who have risen. And all of the ones who have risen seem to have one thing in common, and that is they seem to understand how power is properly wielded. For example, I'm thinking about LeVar Burton. Everybody's heard of how LeVar Burton's got his Reading Rainbow Kickstarter, right? But LeVar Burton owns the rights to the brand of Reading Rainbow. Think about that. LeVar Burton understood something we've been talking about for years here. If you are part of something, you're supposed to own it. A lot of people thought that LeVar Burton was crazy. After reading Rainbow folded its tent, they thought he was crazy to buy the rights to it. Why would he want the defunct brand of a canceled TV show that could only be put on the air because of television? It's because he had a plan B. And look what LeVar Burton has done with that. Over $3 million in 3 days. Now, you compare that, on the other hand, to, like, for example, the Veronica Mars Kickstarter. It took them 30 days to get $5.7 million. I think it's safe to say LeVar is going to far outstrip that. I'm also thinking about other Kickstarters. I'm thinking about other fundraising efforts by other people that you might have come into contact with. These people did well, but Intelligent Black Society did better. And when that kind of power gets wielded, you better believe that it's going to be something when it strikes. For those of you who have made your voices heard, I salute you. Because this is a movement that is worth being part of. And we're not going to be complaining about Donald Sterling 20 years from now. We're laying the groundwork now to get our piece of the world and hold it. And that's something to be damn proud of.
Here at the Black Channel, we've made our name by discussing something that most other people do not talk about because it's flashy, it's not sexy, it's not entertaining. If we were to sit here every evening and discuss black people's sexual dysfunctions, not throw relationships in with sexual dysfunction, if we were to sit here and discuss that, that would get tons of attention. That would get tons of interest. We'd have phone lines lit up from the moment we get here to the moment that we leave. Because that's something that black people can wrap their heads around. If we were talking about nothing but rappers and entertainers, people even here at this website, they like it more when I talk about rappers. I had a bunch of phone calls when I talk about rappers. Not so many when we talk about straight education and straight information. When I talk about building a fiber optic internet network, you're all using the internet to listen to this broadcast right now. And yet, when I talk about what you need to do to building your own, all of a sudden, people nod off and go to sleep. Power in the 21st century, as a matter of fact, throughout all of human history, but power in the 21st century, when I use the term power, understand, power is synonymous with survival. From this day on, power and survival need to be understood as the same thing. They're one and the same. And information is the ultimate power. But if information puts you to sleep, if you can't be bothered to be the smartest person in the room, and if information puts you to sleep and you can't stay engaged with that, then we've got a survival issue going on here. At that point, your very survival comes into question, whether or not you can. Because if the only thing that you can be interested in are rappers and porn stars, if that's the only thing that excites you, that drives you, that generates interest in you, if those are the only things that you can get excited by, we got a problem, a real serious issue here. For this broadcast, even for those of you who listen, not nearly enough of you spread this around. You all don't do that. There's just a few people every week who do that. Everybody else wants to hang out. Understand something, even that's going to find its end. Even that's going to find its end. When it was time to sell the Clippers, did the NBA invite public input? Hell no. How many people did they invite into the room even when people wanted to submit their bids for the team? How many people did they invite in the room? What I'm trying to tell you is that power does not move in big, huge, large masses of apathetic, uninterested, and unengaged people. That's not how power works or power moves. Power works and it moves through a dedicated group of individuals who have the ability to exert their influence. And if you can't stay interested long enough in where true power lies, which is information, that's a bad thing. a bad thing. People get very excited when you spring on them about relationships. Now, relationship for black folk is just a euphemism for sex. That Negroes get very animated for, very excited, very happy. But when we talk about this, not very much excitement. And for black females out there, you should be especially angry and upset. For every black woman listening to this broadcast, if you are with a man who does not listen to it or will not listen to it and will not call us and will not engage, shame on you, and you deserve whatever you get, whatever happens to you when he leaves and you're broke, or it's 20 years from now and you're still broke or more broke than you are today. Understand, you had that coming because you couldn't identify power when you saw it. You couldn't be concerned about that beforehand. His lack of interest beforehand didn't bother you. But when things got difficult with you, that's when you started getting interested in it. And that's not going to work. Not for individuals who are supposed to be teaching the children and inspiring progress for the children. So many of our complaints in black society are in the very fact that we don't have a purpose for being, and the things that do motivate us and do drive us are nothing to be motivated and driven by. They're nothing to be motivated or driven by. This place should be like a church every single weekend. Black people should be lined up and flocking here, but that's not what happens. And it's not what happens because I refuse to dance. Professor Truth refuses to dance. Mona Lachey refuses to dance. We refuse to entertain people. I'll tell you all right now, I have a singular goal in the way that I'm editing 7 a.m., and the goal is for it to have you walk out of that theater, turn off that DVD completely sober. I want you sober and, to be totally honest with you, a little bit despondent. Because I don't want you leaving cheering and clapping. That's not what I want. I want you to walk away from this film understanding how dire your situation is. That we just watched the number of affluent white people go up over the last 72 hours. Black people walked away from the table with absolutely nothing. And it's the same mess generation after generation after generation. This is what we do as black people. We have no problem walking away from the table with nothing because we have grown accustomed to the idea that having nothing is the best that we can expect. So I'm going to call you to something different. The telephone lines are now open, and if you are aspiring to something higher, you need to call us. The number is 646-787-1933. That's 646-787-1933. Personal access code to the blackest radio program in existence, one of its kind on planet Earth today. You definitely need to be here to join us. I was watching a video that I posted up on my Facebook today, or actually, it was from a company called Flat Out. It's a black female who owns it, and one of the hosts from MSNBC, rather one of the hosts from CNBC was talking to the young lady about that. Now, Marcus Lamont was explaining to her, she was saying that, you know, she only has the ability to buy 5,000 shoes at a time. And that this is causing her to not make as much money as she could. Now, I'm not understanding exactly why she fails to have that. But he advised her not, she definitely shouldn't sell. She's even gone out and bought vending machines for her shoes. I mean, she's very intrepid. But how many black people in black society are talking about her? How many black people in black society are talking about females like this, people like this? How often can that even hold our attention? Can that even hold our attention long enough to get something done? And unfortunately, in most cases, it can't. And that's why we remain the poorest people in the world. Not because we don't have enough money, but because we don't have enough interest in it. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines now and take a couple of calls. Caller from 314, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Jason.
Hello, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Ariel from St. Louis.
Hello, Ariel from St. Louis. What's on your mind, sister?
I have a question.
Is the only way to have wealth and influence to a business?
Is the only way to have power, wealth, and influence through a business? No. Having a business is not the only way to gain power, wealth, and influence. If someone is willing to give it to you, or if you are able to ingratiate yourself with people who do have power, wealth, and influence already. However, those last two options there generate two specific problems. Number one, that basically puts you back at the medieval level. It puts you back into a caste system where those who are born with power, wealth, and influence have it, and those who are not simply never get it, because now you're having to cater to other people. You don't really have the ability to generate it on your own. You have to wait somebody else to give it to you in some capacity. That's not really a good situation to be in. Not really a good situation at all. So, yes, there are other ways to get it, but the problem is that those ways of getting it do not make you suited. First of all, they're not easy to get a hold of, and second of all, they do not prepare you to hold it. Going in those situations do not prepare you to hold it. That's why most monarchies fell relatively quickly. If they made it to the grandchildren, that was it. It was over by then. Monarchies fall very easily because the power is consolidated among a few people and nobody else has an opportunity to gain anything on their own. So a business gives you the ability to generate power, wealth, and influence that you will be able to control in a manner that will allow you to be able to overcome people who already have it. These other things do not allow you to overcome them because by definition, you are receiving it from them. So in a situation like that, we would not be trying to overthrow the Donald Sterlings. We would be trying to figure out how to make you a kinder, gentler tyrant. You'd have to. That is the basis of Kunin. Kunin is a bunch of people who are living under the caste system, the dust system. Now I'm waiting for somebody to bring me my daily bread. And that's why Kunin doesn't work for the masses. There are only one or two seats at the table for Kunery. It's not like it's this great big long buffet table. It's not like that's what it is. It's a very small table with one or two seats, and that's it, because that's about as many coons as a person with power needs. They don't need a bunch of coons. They need people who can help generate it.
Okay. I had another question, but I forgot it. I do have another question. All right, so... due to recent events, I am supposed to be moving to Texas, and I am going to be going to school there for my senior year. Now, there are two schools right next to each other where my sister lives who I'm going to be staying with. There's a charter school, and then there's a regular public school, and I can't figure out which one I should go to because I want to generate the most, get the most knowledge out of it so I can go to college. But I don't know which one I should go to. I mean, I just thought you would probably be able to help me with that. I mean, I don't know how you would help, but I just thought you might have something to say about that.
Well, definitely, if you're going to be – I know you expressed before that you wanted to learn about computer science. And you would want to definitely take the best program that you can, whether it's, you know, University of Texas or whatnot. You want to make sure it's a state university, and you want to make sure that they have a – You really need to, if you're going to be in Texas, you're really going to want to, I mean, you can look it up online, people who are happy with their educations, because they rate schools, okay? And what you're going to need to do, like white folk, I mean, you need to check out the schools that you're looking at and rate, find out the ratings for the ones on their computer science programs. there's too many for me to go over. But you go, you need to check, you need to investigate the school that you are looking at, because I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and talk about the University of Austin if you're not going, you know, Austin, Texas. That's, we're not going to get into that. But wherever you're going and whatever you're considering, you need to rate them and find out how high their rating is among people who've been to the school, and among, there's a number of different websites you can find them. Just go Google it for websites that rate the colleges and universities. Also, you want to make sure they give you the ability to gain a doctorate or at least to be able to gain your master's. And if you can, a doctorate, you definitely want that also. So those are the things that you really look for.
Okay, I was actually talking about a high school because I'm just on my just senior year, but I get that because the high school is next that I'm going to. There's a charter one, and then there's a public one. Now, the public one focuses on STEM, which I think is a type of learning curriculum. I'm not sure, which is good. But then again, the charter school is, I heard that charter schools are better than public schools. I'm not sure, so I just wanted to get your opinion. Everybody says I should go to the public school that is based on that, but I don't know. I just wanted to ask.
Well, as far as public school versus charter school, once again, that's a situation that you have to look at on a case-by-case basis. Charter schools simply mean they're run by companies. Just because it's run by a company or an organization does not mean that it's superior to a public school that you're looking at. So don't get wrapped up in that one. I mean, charter schools, you know, school boards want to fluff off their responsibilities and cut costs. That's why they want to dump off the schools onto corporations. What we find out, though, is that when the corporations take over, the cost of education actually goes up, and the quality of education in a lot of cases goes down. But because they're trying to keep it low. Yeah, because when it's owned by a corporation, they're going for profit potential. Student excellence is not what they really go for in a lot of cases. Once again, you will have to go on a case-by-case basis to determine exactly which school would be the best for you. Where public school versus charter school is concerned, it's going to be hard to get accurate information for that. But what I will tell you is that don't just go based off of, well, it's a charter school. Every school district in America, Texas, should be able to show you their graduation rates. So whatever school you're going to, you all need to look that up from the Department of Education for that state. How many students are they graduating? And you want to look at the overall four-year cycle. But in your case, I mean, if you're on your last year of school, I don't know how much stock I put in that to begin with. I'm not really sure how much.
Well, I didn't really have much to talk about this time, but I just wanted to ask about that. I'm thinking of going to the public school because I've been doing a lot of research, and it seems good, and their requirements, too. Like, one of the requirements is that in order for you to graduate, you must have an acceptance letter from a college. And I'm like, that's really smart. I think more schools should do that. So that's one of the reasons, and then, you know, the 4 years that you need, things like what you need for your whole 4 years. I don't know if I'm going to be behind or not, because some of their classes are different than what I had to take. It's like they have more classes, more requirements, but I just wanted to ask, so, yeah.
Well, I'm definitely glad that you're thinking it over. I'll let you have the last word.
Black First.
Black First, sister, thank you very much for giving us the call here today. Let's see if we can grab a couple of more callers on the line here. Caller from 646, you're on live with the Black Channel. Caller from 646, you're on live with the Black Channel. Are you awake?
Yeah, I'm here. Black First. This is Hannibal from the Bronx. Sorry, I was switching to speaker, off speaker. It's been a great experience since I came on to your broadcast in the last couple of months. And I have to thank you for the encouragement and putting me and my wife in the right direction. It's been a really good thing. You know, it's like switching from the job section over to the business section. It's been I've been feeling really alive in the last few months since I've been listening to your broadcast. And I just want to share my experience and give encouragement to the other brothers out there trying to, you know, move forward. I've been taking an entrepreneur course at a college, And, you know, things are going really well. And my wife and I have been really doing really good in finding and starting, putting together a business plan and all that stuff that you've been talking about. And it's just funny because I went over to in the Bronx, they had a business section, and they were telling us, I know they gave away and they contributed $70 million to the businesses in the Bronx. And I was speaking to a gentleman, and he didn't even speak English. So what did that tell us? He speaks Spanish. So he had to go to the back and find someone who speaks English. This guy, they have contributed $70 million to the Bronx businesses, and this gentleman didn't even speak English. He spoke only Spanish. So it's like that was an eye-opener for me. And then I drove up to Albany a couple of weeks ago, my wife, it was a commerce, business commerce, and when we were approaching them, they didn't even want to entertain us. And that it actually made me feel good because, you know, I felt like, you know, I'm getting close to where the money's at because these people were not used to seeing black people. My wife and I were there being around money, excuse me. But, you know, everything's coming into plan. You know, my wife is really following my lead, and I'm really proud of her. You know, she's finding places to put up, you know, set up our business. And the plan is coming into play, and I have to thank you. And I'm just making a comment. That's all.
Well, first of all, I'm very glad to hear that things are going well for you here. At the end of the day, it's not like this is optional. The people who are coming across that border are not coming across the border looking to get a job. They want to revise American immigration. Why? As I played for you all video, gave you all the link before, where the guy was saying that they figured that the solution to America's entrepreneurship, you know, the number of new businesses in America last year actually fell for the first time in 40, 50 years. It actually fell. Thank you, Barack Obama. And when they asked the folks exactly what was it that they thought was causing that or whatever, they're saying it's lack of entrepreneurship and what can we do to fix that? Their suggestion was that we need more immigrants because immigrants are the people who are most likely to start their own business. Now, these were two white men not suggesting that we motivate Americans, but that, nah, just give up on America. Don't you know that's the corporations talking?
Right.
Don't you know that that's the corporations talking? You got plenty of black men who want to start a business, have no access to capital. The corporations do not want to compete against black men. They want individuals who will assimilate into the white court structure. They want individuals who will assimilate into the dominant culture. And we, by and large, don't do that. These other folk come off the boat and off the plane, ready, willing, and chomping at the bit to do it. So understand, that's your competition. They're not coming over here to get a job at the plant. They're coming here to acquire power, wealth, and influence. And the only way you're going to do that is by getting a job. I mean, it's by getting a business, not getting a job.
Right, right.
Getting a job is going to ensure that you work for somebody with power, wealth, and influence. You are not going to get there any other way. Now, where exactly is it you're taking this course at?
Oh, it's at Lehman College in the Bronx.
Okay, Newman College?
Lehman College in the Bronx.
Okay, Lehman College, okay. That way, mm-hmm. In New York or whatever, and they want to know about that kind of thing, we can definitely recommend it to them and let them know, hey, you've got options out there. I'm glad to see that someone's at least talking about that. How many folk are in your class?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. There's 12, and of the 12, there's the 8 of them are black, and the other are Hispanic, and the professor's a Latino.
So the professors are Latino. And there are some black students in there.
Yeah, I'm the only African-American in there, but the other ones are black, you know, black first, you know, it's all good.
Well, the people who are about power, wealth, and influence understand the keys. And if you understand the keys, then you understand that that's the only way you're going to get there. Now, if you've got questions in your mind about that or whatever, if you're trying to figure out some way to get there without doing what needs to be done, then, yeah, you don't. If you're looking for a job or somebody to give you one, if you're looking for somebody to hand you things, yeah, that's exactly what's going to occur. But if you're looking for power, wealth, and influence, you understand that there's only one way to get that, and that is going to be through what you own, what you control, and what you're passing down. That means you need a business. What you can make as an employee is limited before you even walk in the door. Now, is this course called Entrepreneurship 101? What exactly is it called?
It's not 101, but what is it called? I'm not sure what it's called. It's called an entrepreneurship. All I know is I don't know the actual title, but the first week was business plan, second week was finance, second week is credit, marketing is next couple of weeks, and something else, tactics. Yeah.
Well, you know, when I was in Philadelphia talking to Shalimar Blakely, the executive director of the African American Chamber of Commerce, she had pointed out to me that the Chamber of Commerce of Philadelphia, the African American Chamber of Commerce of Philadelphia, actually offers an entrepreneur course. And they will actually help you at the end of it. They teach you how to write a business plan. And they have a mentoring program, which I thought was very, very good. So for those of you in Philadelphia, the African American Chamber of Commerce also offers that. And, I mean, we're just talking about for just hundreds of dollars, not thousands. That's what they offer. Now, I don't know how many chambers of commerce around the country offer that, but that's the kind of thing that black folks will be looking into. This thing doesn't just teach you to write a business plan. It also puts you in touch with mentors so that when you get at the end of it and whatnot, they also help you to get access to lending institutions. Now, all that having been said, their enrollment in these courses has been very low. And did I mention that Philadelphia, for black people in Philadelphia, are some of the poorest folk in America?
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of money for shoes. For what it costs for a pair of Air Jordans, you can pay for a whole year of membership to the African American Chamber of Commerce of Philadelphia. Actually, for less than a pair of Jordans. But that does not interest us. The shoes do. Power, wealth, and influence does not.
Yeah, the shoes, the cars, all the things. I talked to some brothers about, doing the thing with the 7 a.m. contributions. And the short, they see it as the short, buying the car or buying the shoe is instant gratification. You know, they can buy a Range Rover or whatever and look like they got money. But, those guys are dead broke, you spend all your money on things that are, that don't really contribute to power, wealth, and influence, and that doesn't really get people's attention. But there are people that are listening. That's how a body starts from a nucleus, and the nucleus is right here. The nucleus when it starts is infinitesimal compared to a body. So even if it's small, only a couple of people listen to me and say, "Listen, I tell them this is the business courses that are being available." Most people don't want to listen because they have money, they got something going on, whatever. But, a few people are listening, and I think that it's catching on. It will catch on, and it will build and will grow. What you're doing is great. And I have to mention, I feel like Neo in The Matrix. You asked me to take the red pill or the blue pill, and I took the red pill, and it's scary as hell at first, but, it's great. You feel alive. All the brothers out there, look out for those empowerment courses in those cities. Every city, I'm pretty sure every city has one. Just go to the municipality and look into it, and they have entrepreneur courses. And if they do that, you're taking that red pill, that you're told to take. We all got to take that red pill, man. It's the only way to go. It's either that or die.
Well, you use the term instant gratification. I guess that's what makes me a little bit different because I've never really been one of these people. Lacking money has never made me feel very damn gratified. Knowing that only having a car, black people are the only people in this world, and I go into this in 7 a.m. I'm revealing stuff about it's going to be in the documentary, but in 7 a.m. I discuss a Pew Research poll that found that most black people do not have assets of any kind other than a car. What they did was they took a look at black people's assets, what we define as assets, and what they realized was that once we removed an automobile from consideration, because that is technically considered an asset, but once we, it's a low-lying asset that depreciates in value, once we remove that from the equation, most black people do not have an asset of any kind. I don't consider being in that position to be very gratifying for me. It's not very gratifying for me. But that is gratifying to most black people. Kind of shows you how low their standards are. Now, I can help somebody who's got low income. I can't help somebody who has low standards. So I tell the black females about the weight thing. I can help somebody who has a weight issue. I can't help somebody who has a apathy issue. Now, that I can't help. If you're having trouble losing weight, you can be helped. If you're having trouble caring about losing weight, now that's a different problem. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
That's it. You said it all. Keep doing what you're doing. It's working. Black First.
Black First, brother, thank you very much for joining us this evening. You know, Professor Truth, I have never considered it to be very gratifying that the only thing you have is a car and a pair of damn shoes. And the fact that most black people can be called off, bought off so easy, that tells us how low their personal standards for themselves are.
Broken. Totally and thoroughly broken. Broken of mind, broken of heart, broken of spirit. And these people will take you nowhere. The worst part about somebody who's been broken is you can't fix them. You can't even get them to see that they're broken. This is how we get people who will be sitting here telling them, you can't stay where you are, you're going to die. And the first thing comes to their mind is, let me do me, you do you. Okay, fine. Let that be your epitaph. That's what we're going to go ahead and put on your tombstone. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not going to waste time putting up your tombstone. Yeah. And the last caller, what he said was absolutely true. Knowledge is out there. And they're waiting for you to pick it up. But with black people, it's not enough to simply have the knowledge. We're going to have for ourselves a community that we can go to and that wealth is actually going to be generated from and circulated among. We've already learned with integration that trying to find a way to graft ourselves onto someone else's machine, that's not going to work. And please don't believe that you're going to shame other people into recognizing your basic humanity. You've been going to do that since 1865. How's that working out for you? No. The only road to improvement for us, the road for black empowerment goes straight through a black community. And that's what's starting here. This is the genesis of it. I suppose what the last caller was getting at, saying that what's going on here is working and let's keep at it. TBA and I are saying basically that Claude Anderson said that 2012 was going to be when the door slammed shut. Now, he said that basically there's a little bit of space in there, but only enough to get a foot through. Maybe you can squeeze that open. Black Authority and I get it. We do not want, what we don't want is for the march of intelligent black society to wind up having to become a scramble. Because what's happened is, you know, we're trying to do too many things that basically should have been laid in place 40 years ago, but we are trying to do it late in the game. We don't want this thing to turn disorganized. So it's a matter of, you know, we're not evangelists. Nobody's going to be going city to city like the prophets of the Old Testament, trying to figure out where the people who require saving are at. This is not going to be just a nucleus. This is going to wind up becoming the brain, the first real think tank of a invigorated, intelligent black society. And the things that we've been talking about here, the things that are not entertaining, that are not exciting, they are going to wind up becoming the doctrine that saves us. One of the things that I touched on in my video I'm working on about why 7 a.m. matters is that the sad truth is that black empowerment isn't for most black people. Most black people don't want empowerment. They want black amusement. I mean, it says a lot when the highest grossing movie of the year is a comedy from black people. We should be sober and serious on everything. But instead, every time you see black people, we're trying to laugh about something. We're trying to make a joke about something. We told you years ago, this is not politically oriented entertainment, and that got rid of a lot of people right then and there. Oh, y'all ain't trying to entertain us? Hell no. I'll let Tyler Perry do that. And you'll wind up the same sorry boat that he's going to wind up in. This is about empowerment. And thank God it's beginning here. This is going to be hard-nosed in your face, starting with the people in this room. You watch 7 a.m., you're not going to laugh. You're not going to smile. It'd be enlightening, but it's not going to be uplifting because we're not going to sit here and try to put some gloss on the sorry shape that we're in. You need to have it put in your face just how bad the situation is. I remember listening to a lecture by a British intellectual, and he was talking about the fall of communism and how after communism fell, there were some former Soviet filmmakers who have been basically hoarding archival footage, waiting for the day when the Iron Curtain fell. And after it did, they put together a movie, more of a documentary than anything else. And they showed it in as many theaters as they could to let Soviet people see just how bad communism had been for them, how bad the suffering was. And this was one of the key ingredients that made it where when the neo-communists tried to retake power from Boris Yeltsin, they failed. Because there were a lot of people who understood clearly that the old life can't come back. This is where black empowerment is right now. We did not receive our debriefing after slavery. We did not receive our debriefing after the failed civil rights movement, and it was a failure. So first order of business for intelligent black society is we are going to have to receive a true debriefing so we can see how bad the situation is and understand why it is that we must go in the direction of total black empowerment. Because the only other alternative is oblivion. It can be fast-moving in the form of gentrification or slow-moving in the form of us trying to basically graft ourselves, you know, like Brazilians trying to graft ourselves into ersatz Europeans. But it's going to be oblivion nonetheless. And all of the deaf comedy jams and 106 and Park and the Real Housewives of whatever that you watch and all the NBA games or rap videos, it's not going to make oblivion any less painful. Now, I don't know about you, but the way that I was not raised to suffer, and I was not raised to die. I was raised to grow and to become more powerful. Power is not a bad thing. For a group of people who want something in this world, power is the only thing worth having. And as I read the history of the world, we've been the only group of people on the planet who have taken the power and wielded it correctly. I mean, last time I checked, when you had black people running things, granted it was a while back, but when you had black people running things, we didn't have the gigantic push to decide that human beings were in and of themselves expendable. Now you could render yourself useless, but we didn't look at human beings as being commodities in and of themselves. We understood the value of human capital. But I look at us today, 45 million weak. Don't tell me 45 million strong. We're 45 million weak. Understand the value of another black person standing next to us. A million people go and march against George Zimmerman, and none of them realized that the reason Zimmerman was even going to get away with what he had done was because they had corrupt police chiefs and corrupt politicians. Instead of them getting together and say, let's make up an enemies list of individuals who need to be driven from the arena, from the public arena, need to be driven from power. Instead, they sat there and said, we're going to demonstrate. We're going to light some candles. We're going to buy some hoodies. Yeah, you better believe Sartor made a ton of money during the Trayvon Martin debacle. They wanted to stand around and bemoan their fate. That's the reason why the Black Channel doesn't talk about demonstrations. The only demonstration you need to be part of is a demonstration of power. And standing around with a bunch of other weak, helpless people begging for mercy from the dominant society, that's not power. Power is when a group of angry people get together and say, how are we going to put some pain on the opposition? That's power. Power is when people decide that the age of excuses is over. That when you see a good fight, your job is not to clap and cheer on the combatants. When you see a good fight, your job is to get in it. Your job is to get in that fight and start striking some blows. And as I read it, there are at least 781 rock-ribbed, steel-jawed, fire-breathing fighters in the B-1 Brigade. They've been swinging, and in the months that are coming, in the years ahead, you're going to watch as those blows start connecting. We are entering a new era of action and not words. The Black Channel is going to be the tip of that spear, unapologetic, purely. And when we start talking about the conversations that matter for Black people, the ones who sit there and start giggling and laughing, they'll ask to leave. And the ones who sit there and start talking about minutia or start talking about why they can't get a date on Friday night, they'll be asked to leave.
We're going to go ahead and see if we can take a few more phone calls here. Caller from 330, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Black First, Dave from 330.
What's on your mind, brother?
A few things. One, I wanted to respond back to the sister that was going down to Texas. I wanted to give her just what I know from my experience, and this should help out. I know she's talking about high school, but sooner or later she'll be going to college. Now, what I found out about is if you're a resident of Texas, you go to college for basically almost nothing. I think it comes out to like $60 a credit. If you go to like community college down there, they foot the rest of the bill. So you definitely want to take advantage of a community institution, even at just at first, to save yourself a lot of money because debt will strangle anyone. Now, there's a brother down there at Dallas Community College who's in the professorship, who teaches VMware technologies and EMC technologies, which is back-end data center storage and building data centers and architecting, things of that nature. Now, if you were just to go get that, I'm just going to give you a scenario for Ariel. So give you a scenario, and the room can hear me out and debate in the chat however you want. If you go take a year of his courses, which will give you training in EMC storage, NetApp storage, and VMware storage, and then come back and put down your resume. He has a Cisco Nexus class, too, which gets you involved in virtual networks through Cisco virtual routers, which is a whole other ball of wax. So you get those four classes, and you knock them out, and you go take the certification exam for each of them. You probably spend the most, maybe $1,500 for all the tests. You can take them one at a time. You come away with those three or four certificates. You could easily walk into a job down there in a data center making $110, $120 a year. That's not small change to start. If you're 21, 22 years old and you're making six figures, you ain't doing that bad.
Glad you let them know.
Yes, sir. And I wanted to get that to her because I took a VMware class from him over the internet, and I paid the out-of-state fee. And for her, it would be about $400, $450. No, $250, $300 total for the VMware class for her to take it since she was in Texas. I paid $800 and ran to go pay it because if you take it outside of university up here, it's $5,000. And when I took that VMware class and paid for the exam, you get a discount exam, I passed first time, which is like $70. I get calls every week, at least four or five calls every week from recruiters asking me, do I want to leave my job? I don't look for jobs. They find me. So if you're looking out there, if you're looking at possibilities down there and you want to get into IT, I have a computer science degree. Let me tell you. You will make more money doing that to start than you will writing code, unless you write your own code and sell it. which nothing's stopping you from doing that now. There are 12, 13-year-olds who are millionaires writing their own mobile app code. So if that's the route you want to go, you don't need to go through 4 years of school to recruit and write code. It's called getting a programming language like Visual Studio, and because you're a college student, DreamSpark will give it to you for free. Look it up. Go get the software for free, build your own code, upload it to the App Store, and make money that way. But if you're looking to get into IT as something that requires a little bit of documentation to prove you know what you're doing, that's an easy two-year way in out there to get to six figures. And most of your colleagues that will be in college with that four-year degree, they'll never see it. No offense, but a psych degree don't get you there in 4 years.
A psych degree is not going to get you there in 50 years. Unless you become Dr. Phil. Psychology, sociology, the liberal arts, all those things are completely worthless to building power, wealth, and influence. You might be the grooviest person at the prison interviewing Hannibal Lecter, but you're not making much money. You cannot parlay that into a business. You can parlay that into a practice. You cannot parlay it into a business. You will only get paid off of your own physical labor. There's not going to be unearned income streams. That's the difference. Now, you develop your own app. Hell, just take a look at the Candy Crush people. Need I say more? They just plug that thing in. Hell, the money prints itself at this point. The money is printing itself right now. That's the kind of thing I want to get to be a part of. Go ahead, brother.
And again, I want to add to that. Remember the application that just, there was an app developer in Asia who developed Flying Birds, I think it was. He made so much money revenue and still had so much attention, he shut it down and they paid him to put it back. So, yes, I totally agree. There's a lot of money out there in app development if you're going that way. If you're trying to go hardware, EMC, VMware, Citrix has a lot of demand because right now the original Citrix generation is getting ready to retire or semi-retire because they've been doing it for 20, 30 years. Those technologies are big right now. Microsoft will always be big. Unix will always have its core following. Those are things you want to look into getting educated on, whether it's home training or school training, getting the passing certification exams and moving to IT that way. Because I can tell you a story where I had got my A+ and I was working at a utility, and I was working at a utility doing PC support for the corporation. And I ran into a colleague there, and that colleague was a better programmer than me when we studied programming. He stayed all in software. The minute I begged the university, and they adopted Cisco Academy as part of the curriculum, and I fought my department to get permission to take it. I took it, even though I never was able to pass the exam at that time. I passed later. I still have an A+ I passed and my NET+ I passed because that was part of the training. So I had that plus a degree going in, so I was able to outshine most of the people who applied for the job, and I got the job, and I was making good money back then, and he was a better programmer than me, and he came in as a radiation technician. I said, oh, you're at the company. I said, what department are you in? I'm a radiation technician. I said, why? He said, because no one wants to hire a programmer right now. And I thought back to when I told him, look, I'm looking at an industry right now, and it's not looking like degrees are standing that strong. Only because when the professor sat in class, in the night class, who was the adjunct professor, and told us, look, you getting this degree, you guys need to get certified too. Because if you think you're going to be special with a degree, you ain't even close to being special. So you need to differentiate yourself. And everybody in the class balked. I went to go see him at the class and said, I'm going into hardware. Which way do I need to go? He looked at me and said, are you doing the class or not? I said, I'm going to do Cisco. He said, go that way. Finish out this degree, but make those your electives. And it's going to be hard. Fight it out.
Now, I want to ask you about something else here. Because working in computers extensively the way you have, I guess I really got one question for you. What could you do with $500
million? $500 million? There's a million things you can do. The first thing that comes in my head is I got $500 million. I want to get somebody on my team, at least for the deal, who has commercial real estate experience. $500 million, I could build data centers. Put in the right optical LAN traffic, put up, I mean, optical WAN traffic, put in the right routers, top of the line 7,000 Cisco routers, put in a lot of HP quad processor, 8-core processors, 256 to 700 gigs of RAM in the server, fill up with SSDs, put a $250,000 EMC stand for 4 servers. I could take probably about, with cage, I'd probably take about, let's say, if a whole modern size building, let's say we have 200 servers with the proper cooling and everything invested plus security, 200 servers, and I could virtualize each server to make 20. 200 times 20 is, about 4,000? 4,000 servers, an average business use 20, so divide that by 20, by 10 is 400, by 2 is 200. That's 200 businesses that would be paying me money every month to store their data. And I'm sure that's not even half that money.
Okay. Now, why don't we try something outside of computers and data systems?
Any area in particular, or just pick one?
Just pick one.
Okay. $500 million, you got $500 million, you got sitting there. Okay, my first thing is, okay, you can always do real estate, commercial real estate. You can do that and get that real easy at a bottom basement price. But if you get that kind of money, you might want to build something that requires a team. One of my hobbies is finance. $500 million, you can start your own finance firm. You can have a bunch of guys bring them in and say, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
You can go ahead and bring in a bunch of guys, hire them in, and then go ahead and work up under you and pay them a small salary to start out, get some new guys in there, train them up in a system, put together a system, get you two people who have been in finance, who are moderately successful, give them a cut or whatever cut they want of the revenue, and then bring them in to basically do up the structure and go ahead and license it out, and then go ahead and create a franchise of financial firms.
Okay, now let's try one more thing. Let's try something new that nobody or few people are doing right now. If you had $500 million, what could you do with that?
Something that nobody's doing right now. One model of creativity
Nobody or few people.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Could you repeat that, sir?
Well, I don't mean just nobody, you know. I mean, but something that either nobody or very few people are currently doing right now.
Not technology related. Nobody's doing right now. Let's see. Let's take an industry. Let's take the car industry for example. Just take one. Okay. One thing that cars. So one of the complaints with cars is cars are breaking down. Okay, you have car insurance. You can extend your insurance out. Out for the life of the car if you put more money into it. Okay. I got one. Something that sat in the back of my head one time. It is sort of tech related. Okay, you go ahead and you take these certification exams. They could cost $100 and they cost $500 a piece. That's cash you got to come up with. But if you come up with a mechanism that you have a loaning facility specifically for the exams where you say, okay, I signed dotted line, you charge a small interest rate, you do a short-term loan, which is still legal, unfortunately, a high interest rate. Do a short-term loan, keep the 30% you're paying that interest rate to a payday loan, and then say, okay, I want to get a loan for a certificate, okay? You sign the paper, you sell the certificate you want, they buy it for you and ask you what day you want to take it. I would love to do that. I don't have the capital to do it yet.
Now, the reason why I ask those questions is because, as I said at the beginning of the broadcast, Black people were all beside themselves, cheering and jumping around at the prospect of Magic Johnson being able to spend $600 to $800 million to buy the Clippers. And we know Magic made them an offer and expressed interest in buying them. So the question now becomes, well, Magic, if you were able to get that kind of money together for something as trivial as a basketball team, it's not like those are the only invest on earth that are worth that kind of money. Far from it. I would put that on the lower end of investments that are worth that kind of money. There's plenty of stuff out there that you could do. Plenty with that kind of money. Why is it that nobody has said, well, you know, Magic, there's no reason for you to be talking about going home with lip poked out. You and any other Black person talking about buying the Clippers. Why are you guys not getting together and saying, you know what, we got this kind of money here, or we can get this kind of capital. We got something else in mind. If it's not bouncing a ball, we don't seem to be very interested. We seem to be unable to generate or galvanize interest unless it's sports or entertainment related. And on the low end of entertainment, not even anything huge. Black folk ain't even spending money on that. As Professor Truth pointed out, we couldn't even get black folk to spend $24 million for Death Row Records. It was a white woman with World Music Group. She was the one who did that. All these black millionaires out there, kind of makes you wonder if they really actually have that kind of money, by the way. Death Row was available for sale, and Dre didn't have $20 million to buy Death Row. Dre, you didn't have that? Kind of makes you wonder how he ended up in bed with Jimmy Iovine even after Death Row Aftermath. Sounds like Dre has never really had that much money, y'all. A lot of folk making assumptions about what these people have. Sounds like these folk may not actually have as much as you all like to tell yourselves. If Sergey and Brin of Google had $500 million, we can all just wonder some of what they would come up with. We can just kind of wonder some of the things that they would come up with if they had that kind of money. But for black people, we don't have the ability to decide for ourselves exactly what we can do with our lives that did not come from white people. White people told us that sports was how you people make money, and we've been sitting on that ever since. We don't do anything beyond that. We've been sitting on that ever since. If it's not spoon-fed to us, or if the pump is not primed, according to the white specifications, we're not going to do it. We're just not going to do that. That's the problem that I have. The problem that I have is that we just showed the whole damn world that we got money. We have it in doing anything reasonable with it. We don't have any interest in actually spending on something that really matters.
Yo, TV, I couldn't imagine. I could not imagine this being a bunch of Asian people or a bunch of white people. You know, years ago, there were some white entertainers who, in Hollywood, who didn't get what they wanted from the movie industry. And even though their initial bid basically producers failed, what happened was United Artists became the brainchild of that failure. And there were some Asians who didn't get what they wanted. So next thing you know, here comes Wong Fu Productions and Yum Yum Productions as well. Yum Yum F Productions, I mean. See, that's what other groups do. When they don't get what they want, what they do is they don't sit there and go, well, I guess we're done. What they do is look around and say, wait a minute, look at all these people in the room. This is power. And they immediately start networking, and they turn that into the basis of a venture, a number of ventures. That's the reason why when Asians get together for their business workshops, they start passing around cards, and you see some business deals come out of it. They sit there and say, oh, I was at this convention, or I went to a confab, or there was a company function. Black people get together, and what happens when we get together? Cars, clothes, hoes, and sports. We sow the seeds of our own failure. We sow the seeds of our own poverty. We get a group of people together, that's supposed to be power. You're supposed to be using that. Okay, Donald Sterling doesn't go down. Even if we want to sit here and pretend that we have a stake in trying to change the NBA, fine. Donald Sterling didn't go down. Those black people who got together, they're supposed to be looking at each other at this point and go, wait a minute. We got Magic Johnson, sort of. We got Puff Daddy, sort of. And Oprah, sort of. Ain't it time for us to be putting our dollars together? Ain't it time for us to form a corporation to make sure that bad thing, that bad boy is properly funded? You got some black people who were sitting here talking about, oh, I could become a shareholder in this or that team. You get people together, you got what you need. See, that's how other groups think. They don't sit there and just take a failure lying down. They sit there and say, we are going to have to put our heads together at this point. they go back on the attack. Black Bull, what are we doing? We're sitting here going, well, I hope Mark Cuban doesn't sit there and cheer the death of Trayvon Martin anymore. He has no incentive not to. Power doesn't respect weakness. Power respects power. Mark Cuban can see that the black people who are whining and complaining about Donald Sterling are weak. He does not respect weakness. He only respects that which he cannot overcome. And he already knows he's got enough money and fame that you are not going to touch him. And he's not scared of whether or not you threaten. We don't want him on the Shark Tank. He don't give a damn about that show. You're not going to make him give up on Dallas Mavericks. So what are you going to do? It was Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, to those of you who don't know. He said that either black people are going to learn how to put their heads together for what they want, or the circumstances will become so dire that it forces us to. Problem is, you don't want the circumstances to become so dire that you get together just before they shove you into the gas chambers. That's the wrong time and place for you to stage that unified revolt. That's the lesson that we're trying to teach here at the Black Channel. The empowerment is supposed to be proactive, not reactive. You don't wait until Donald Sterling's come along with the latest outreach, then decide that something needs to be done. And I like what I just saw in the chat room.
Okay, the volume has dropped out here. Are you still there, Dave? Yeah, I think Professor Truth may have popped off here. I'll check back here in a moment and see. Okay, yeah,
Can I say one thing?
Can I say one thing real quick?
If it's the mantra, what we're talking about here. I just came back from a VMware conference. Anybody who wants to study a field, you should be at the conferences or whatever you're studying. If there's a film festival in your area and you try to do films, you need to be there. That's not a gift. That's a requirement. Now, I went to a VMware conference, and two things frustrated me, TBN, and you're going to know what one is already. One was the lack of melanated people. I didn't even say black. I said melanated. That conference was 99% white male. I didn't even put the females in it, period. 99% white male. There were 20 groups of vendors there at that conference. Each of them have technology based on storage and flash, and we're going to make hard drives that don't die, and we're gonna make hard drives that store 2 petabytes, and we're gonna make this new technology that basically moves a file from London to San Francisco, a 400 gig file, in 5 minutes or less. These were all masters, and I'm reading a book on mastery now. Masters, when you talk about mastery, you're talking about someone who has taken a technology or some aspect of their life they want to learn, and they have worked on it for 5,000, 7,000 years. When some of these geek guys see a new technology, they stick with it. They don't run from it. They stick with it. They learn everything they can about it. Conferences, videos, books, classes. They don't care. They put their money where their mouth is to learn it. And when they get to level of mastery, when they can start solving problems about it without thinking through it, the next thing they do is they take their top credentials and they go to another company that's trying to build up, and they join in and get paid to use their expertise to help build a product. And these hard drive setups, one company said, we've been in business 6 months. We sold about 20 units. Each unit cost $75,000, and it was only a 5-team company. I say that to say this. What we should be focused on is, one, getting our acumen together in our field, two, mastering whatever specific part of our field we want to focus on, and three, engineering solutions to solve the problems that have not even been identified yet. When you see something that could be a problem, you say, okay, who would have that problem? How can I fix it? Okay, engineer it. The least you could do if you can't engineer the problem is you could draw a solution on paper, pay $300 to an attorney, and patent it.
Now we got Professor Truth back on the line here. Go ahead, Professor. It looks like we had dropped you once.
Thank you, then. What I was saying was basically that black people, we're supposed to understand the things we need are going to be coming from each other. And if we started doing that, then we would understand that even if overthrowing this tyrant, Donald Sterling, was a worthy goal, even failure, we would have had some great comfort because we would have looked at each other and said, you know what? We may not have been able to knock off Sterling, but we could at least two, maybe three separate companies that could come at us. And in about 5 to 10 more years, we'll be ready to take on Mark Cuban when he starts acting up. That's what would have happened. That's what should have happened. From the ashes of failure, you get embers of a new flame. That's what's supposed to happen. And I think that the Black Child Net is giving a vocabulary to black people and establishing a subculture that says when black people get together, the only conversation of relevance is about power. And power ain't about how many drills you can wiggle. Last thing I'd like to add before we move on is just simply this. The people who have already contributed to 7 a.m., the vanguard of the B1 Brigade, an accurate history of our people is written, and we will be the ones to write it. You will be the ones who get to say, yes, we were part of that. We were not the talkers. We were the doers. We were not content to be angry. We were content to be active. Because when this thing does hit, savor these moments of quiet. Because I tell you, the fire is coming. And a lot of people who were basically sitting here, you know, claiming B1, when the firestorm comes down and the dominant side says, well, that thing over the Black Channel, that's not going away. That thing's, oh, my God, they're sitting here trying to take over our domain. They're sitting here trying to plant their pagan football. Oh, hell no. No, no, no. When they sit there and they start carpet bombing us as only the dominant society can, there's going to be a lot of black people who were previously on the squad who are going to be looking for cover. You see, the process of power is not going to stop here. The fire is going to refine itself. And before it's all over, the B1 Brigade is going to be larger than it is today, though its composition will be different. And those who remain, those who stand the ground, those who say we are unapologetically black first, that group is going to be so ironclad, they are going to be so rock-ribbed, they are going to be so entrenched that nothing will be able to move them. No one and nothing. But more importantly than that, that group is going to be hungry. When you get tested by the fire and you pass through the other side, you don't come out of it weak. You come out of it stronger. You're doggone right we're talking in terms of warfare because we've been getting our brains blown out. We're getting our heads kicked in. And the only thing we have to say for ourselves is, well, we ain't going to give up. Not giving up is not enough. When are you going to get up and start striking some blows? The main reason that the 7 a.m. project was so important to me is because the media defines the culture. The media defines the culture. The reason they thought that we were making strides by trying to buy an NBA team is because we didn't have a loud enough voice out there to say this is a fool's errand. And the reason that black people don't understand that the selling of the Clippers is actually the enshrinement of a new bigoted American dynasty, the reason that they don't understand that is because there's nobody to tell them. But more importantly than that, the kind of conversation we've been having tonight, you got Brother City. I mean, where else on the planet do black people get together and talk like this? The conversation we've had tonight is an absolute accolade. It is an honor and a privilege to be here and see that black people can get together and talk about something that matters. Talk about true empowerment. I've taken part in my fair share of webinars, by the way. And I'll tell you right now, only a few of them do the kind of talk that we've heard here tonight. Only a few of them. So, yeah, Black First is real. Black Empowerment is real. And the black people who have not been able to get their voices heard because the kind of talk that they do isn't considered groovy, this is where they need to be. This is why TBA said you need to be spreading the word. We need more brothers than the one who was talking about how it is that you can put these data servers together and build something huge. I mean, the only thing, live in the so-called information age, but how much information do black people control? How many people have to go to through black people to get access to the internet? How many people are learning how to get their stake, how to claim their part of the World Wide Web through black people? The internet has become a huge boom. I mean, for God's sake, you can learn how to do your own cell phone app off the internet. You don't really go to school that much anymore. If you got enough money to get in the game, a few thousand dollars, you're in. You're in. We can do this, but the focus has to change, and that means that the culture has to change. When black people get together, we have to train and instruct people that you are not supposed to get together and talk about what was on TV last night, oh, the Real Housewives or whatever. You are out of order when you do that. You are not supposed to sit there and say, I heard that Drake was dating some. No, you are out of order. Well, you LeBrons, you are out of order. Because right now what happens is when black people get together and say, hey, you know, we're talking about STEM, and we're talking about getting, you know, we're talking about how much it would cost to buy some razors. Look it up. When black people do that, we got the ignorant who sit there and try to shout the intelligent down. And they get away with it because they have a pre-existing cultural and media infrastructure that encourages them and reinforces them. You can't get any other place out there until now. So do not underestimate what is happening here. Do not underestimate how important it is that Issa Rae can have the unlimited resource of the dominant society behind her, and yet the B1 Brigade has blown her out of the water, and nobody's even heard of us yet. Now, if this is what intelligent black society is capable of, when we're flying under the radar, you just wait until that flag gets planted. You just wait until intelligent black society kicks in the doors and says, we are taking our seat at the table of power. You just wait. That, I mean, if you think that May 18th was a watershed event, when people hear a voice that they've never heard before, the voice of intelligent black society heralded by 7 a.m., it is going to be like nothing that anyone who is listening to this has seen in lifetime. Not since the fall of slavery. Not since the end of Jim Crow. Not since the rise and tragic fall of Marcus Garvey has anything like this been attempted. It's been a long, long time. But we're going to find out who's serious and who's full of talk. Because if you think the only thing that you've got to do, though, is to contribute a couple of dollars, give a couple of black firsts, if you think that's enough, you don't understand. The dominant society is not going to sit on their hands and let you take the power that you're supposed to have. They're not going to do that. They're going to fight you for it. They're going to test you. When the attacks come, it's going to be the dominant society asking a question. And the question they're going to be asking us is, how badly do you want it? Yeah, we know you say you want it bad, but you got to prove it to us. You got to convince us. And if you sit there and say, well, I'll put in for a couple of weeks, that'll be good enough. If you say, I'll fight you to the last man, that ain't good enough. What you do is you ante up, you get all the men and women together, and you make it clear we are going to fight you not until we win, but until we crush you. Because you must be stopped. So that civilized people can have their day. What this movement represents, what the Black Channel represents, what the B1 Brigade represents, what Intelligent Black Society represents, is nothing less than the resurrection of civilization. A properly minded group of people who are looking at the world and asking, how do we get our share of it, and how do we leave the world a better place than we found it? Something that the baby boomers and tragically our Generation X have failed to do. We're leaving a lesser world to future generations. So generations have to be instructed how to reclaim a better tomorrow. And you're not going to do that by sitting there obsessing over sports or sex or shoes. You need so that you have better tomorrow are not sexy. We have to reject that idea. We're not meant to be groovy. We're meant to be powerful. I had a loud argument with a young lady the other day. I was that's part of the reason why I brought up the topic of belief over power. She basically was sitting here arguing with me, telling me that what's wrong with her getting advice on relationships from women. I was like, well, don't you think the best person to tell you about a man is a man, don't you think? I mean, you've been listening to Aunt Esther, and the only thing she's told you is how to be single like her. And she wanted to argue that, well, yeah, I may like hanging out with Pookie and Ray Ray, and yeah, I got myself knocked up by Quantavious, but you know, they were exciting. And I was like, is that the point of a relationship? Be exciting? I asked her to think about the people who she knew who were married for decades, and did it seem like they were excited? And she said, no. I said, now, do they seem like they are interested in each other even after 30 years? And she said, yeah. And I was like, that's what you're supposed to be pursuing. You may be looking for a emotional high, but the problem with an emotional high is you got to come down sooner or later. It's easy to get excited, but interest, that takes a personal investment on your part, so you can stay engaged, so that you can stay involved. Now, needless to say, the young lady, she conceded some of the points that I gave, but at the end of the day, basically what she said was, yeah, I see where you're coming from. But, you know, there's always got to be one of those. With black folks, there's always got to be, but, you know, but you see it is. As intelligent black society, this is the reason why we don't want a big tent. Because the only thing a big tent is good for is a circus. And we've had three rings for the last 150 years. Circus is over. What we need is a small tent. And yes, we should have requirements to get in. We don't just let anybody in. Because that's how you get a bunch of Pookies and Ray Rays and Shaniquas. That's how you get them. Intelligent Black Society's tent is a small tent for a reason. And you better show some hustle if you want to get into it.
We're going to go ahead and see if we can bring somebody else here on the line here. Caller from 321, I think I know who this is. You're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, Black First, it's Melissa.
Hello, Melissa. What's on your mind, sister?
Well, when Ariel called in, my spidey senses tingled because this is my thing. She was asking about charter schools. Now, I've got a girl going into fourth grade and a little boy going into kindergarten next year. And I've looked a lot at the different public, private, and charter schools. And you're right about the charter schools. They're independently managed. What I find fascinating and beneficial about charter schools is also they accept state funding, but they do not have to operate within the boundaries of state laws, and they don't have to adhere to the rules of the teachers' unions. For example, if a charter school has a teacher who's performing, they can give that teacher a bonus. If a charter school has a teacher that is not performing, they can fire them. The teachers are contracted, and they'll get paid better the better they perform in the classroom with the students. I have a love-hate relationship with teachers' unions, but as you know, you almost have to, you know, murder a student in front of the whole class to get fired. And even if you do that, they'll put you in a padded room and pay you your salary for a year first. But that is one of the
children
great benefits
have sex
also.
With them, one or the other. You got to kill them.
Yeah. You know, it's so hard to get fired from being a teacher, which, and it's unfortunate because teachers, you know, can shape society. And I don't know. That's a different discussion. But that is one of the great benefits also of charter schools. One opened up near me, and I considered sending my daughter to it. But, you know, what really got me was, and a lot of parents who look at schools will know this, just because the school is a private or parochial school does not make it a good school. Just because charter schools can pay high-performing teachers and get rid of low-performing teachers does not make it a great school. Everything is there for them to be successful, but that doesn't mean that they are successful. You got to look at what I do is I go to greatschools.org and I look at reviews. real reviews from, well, hopefully real reviews, from teachers and students and parents of students in that school. And it generally goes back a few years. You can find public and private and all kinds of schools there. But one of the advantages of private schools also is they generally don't have to adhere to the teachers' union. And neither one, they have to stick to certain standards in the curriculum, but they don't have to teach for a test per se, because a lot of schools, what they get caught up in is teaching for the state exam at the end of the year. Instead of teaching just to teach these kids and then giving them an exam at the end of the year to really test the limits of their knowledge and see how much they know. So those are all the advantages of these schools, but I find that the best schools do not necessarily have the charter or private label on them. In my area, I did all the research, and it just kept coming back to me. It's not worth spending the extra money at the grade level my daughter is. Now, once you get into 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, that's a different matter, because that's where Florida tends to start failing the students in those middle school years. But for elementary education, you know, the public system is good enough. Now, if you got the money, if you want to spend it, that's fine, but we got to be real picky, and we got to do a lot of research, and you got to look at your state websites and see how these schools have been scoring over the last few years at least, so you know what you're getting into. The charter school I was going to pick was a brand new school. It hadn't been graded yet. When I checked its grade, it was graded a C. The public school my daughter goes to, it has been graded an A school for the last 11 years. You know, so it's kind of touch and go, but you just got to investigate the schools before you get into them. And she also commented that the school that she wanted to go to requires a college acceptance letter in order to graduate. My first thought was any community college will take anybody. So I didn't understand how the school thought that might be some sort of accomplishment or achievement. You know, because you can barely pass, and a state college will take you. So I don't know about that, but I just wanted to give some input on that.
Rather than they want to stick in their own caps and whatnot, just to say 95% of our student population is accepted in the college, blah, blah, blah. But for me, what I look at are things like power, wealth, and influence. And with Dave on the line, you know, he's talking about having a skill that, you know, is paying folk, you know, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000+ a year. Do you understand that when you have that big of a jump on the competition like that, that gives you the ability to go where you want to go quickly? My issue is that, you know, she's not going from high school, going to college and whatnot. First of all, if you're in your last year of high school, just hurry up and get your diploma so you can get out. You need to be going somewhere so you can get on to the next step, because this last year of high school is really just a formality. I would go to the worst damn high school as long as it's the easiest one to get out of. Your mind should have moved out of high school by now. You're mentally, even though physically you're still in high school, you should be mentally already in college and preparing for that. In all honesty, I could see it different if you were a sophomore, but if you're a senior and your last year, your mind's already filled to be on college. You ain't got but 12 months. And as we all know, that's no time at all. As we all know, that is no time to be planning what you're going to do for the rest of your life. That is no time whatsoever to prepare. So she's got a lot of moves she's due quickly. In her case, I would recommend get the hell out of high school and just concentrate on your college. And, you know, if she wants to do computer science, you know, like he said, if they have a course that gives you for data. Now, what he really mentioned in there is that's a specific skill set. Being able to pick up data centers, that's a specific skill set. And if you've got a school with a course that teaches that, you know, everybody talks about Leo Grand, the homeless guy who got how to do Java. Java, that's a specific skill set. But it's one that you can already validate is going to be able to pay dividends and give you the ability to do your own thing. And too often we sit up here, you know, the reason most black women go off into things like psychology or sociology is because they didn't do well at math. And if they didn't do well at math, they're trying to find a course that does not require them to actually learn math.
You know, that is so true. I know women who went to nursing school in these off the wall Puerto Rico because there's no mask requirement. And it's like, well, how are you going to calculate people's medications if you don't know math? I mean, you talk about power, wealth, and influence. There's no way we can have that when we have a group of children who don't value being smart. We make smart so uncool and laughable now. You know, to be smart is to be a nerd and to be unpopular. And that weirds me out. I went to private schools from 3rd through 12th grade. We were preparing for college our freshman and sophomore year. You were already preparing for what you wanted to do, what coursework you wanted to take. You were doing your volunteer hours. You know, in the beginning of junior year, you were getting your college applications ready and sent off. Now, nobody cares. Nobody's pushing the kids to do anything or to go in any specific direction. You know what I see, like, the recurring theme among our people all day, Facebook, Twitter? The recurring theme is, I don't care what anybody else is doing. As long as they're not hurting anyone, let them do what they're doing. And I'm like, oh, my God, we're this lawless group of people. Nobody's smart enough to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to set boundaries. And like you said to me the other day, TBA, be so disciplined that you don't miss what you didn't miss. Everybody's so busy trying not to miss anything and trying to, you know, have fun and be reckless. Nobody wants any type of structure, order, discipline. Nobody wants to worry about the future. Nobody wants to worry about nobody wants to be smart enough to even try and accumulate some money. And that's really depressing for me. It really bothers me that nobody cares enough to teach kids the value of education. And even if you're, you know, you don't want to go be an astrophysicist, the value of being a smart person, knowing more than other people, putting your brain to work to invent or build or start a business or do something. We don't value that as a whole. There's a few of us that do, but there's too many that don't, and it's really dragging us down.
Well, you know, I've always found that to be interesting because I don't have any children. I don't have any kids, and yet I am more concerned about what I'm going to pass down than most people who do have children. And I know that they're not concerned because I don't see them making the moves in their own lives necessary to cultivate some wealth that you can pass down to your children. They are just existing. They just go to their jobs. The children are freaking luggage. But that's it. They just go from one job to another. At no point do they ever sit down and say, all right, I need to get to the work of acquiring power, wealth, and influence. And thus they have nothing to pass down to their children whatsoever. And I'm a guy who has no kids, and I routinely find that I am much more concerned about that than the average black parent, single or otherwise.
That's a shame. But, you know, we're so caught up. There has not been an entire generation post-slavery, let's say post-civil rights. There has not been a generation to say, you know what, kids, it's not enough that you be somebody's employee. You need to own something. You need to build your own businesses and start your own networks. We haven't had that. So everybody is still caught up, including myself. I'm trying to break out of it. People are still caught up in who am I going to work for? How much money can I make working for this other person? We've been deprogrammed from that.
I can help a person who does not have financial literacy. I cannot help a person who does not have financial desire.
I feel like I can't help a person who doesn't have the desire to be smart. If you don't want to be a smart person, I mean, if all you want to do in life is, it's not even living. It's like not dying. If you just want to go through life and not die and be 74 and unable to live on your Social Security, so you either A, eat cat food, or B, bag groceries for the extra money, why would anybody want to live that way? That should be the furthest thing from our minds. And like you say, for the average worker, the retirement scheme does not work. And the only way we can actually, quote, unquote, retire, meaning like my dad says, you know, I'm not retiring from working. I'm just retiring from being a professional. You can do what you want to do because if you feel like getting up in the morning. But the only way to truly just sit and enjoy yourself is to have a business or have something that's making money for you without you having to get out of bed. And we don't have anybody aside from TVA and Professor Truth, banging on the door saying, if this is what you want, you all have to wake up and get up and stop being so coy about education and have a desire for knowledge and actually want to do something. Because we're all just sitting around worrying about, you know, who slept with who.
It's not so much that people are okay with eating cat food. It is just that nobody plans to fail. They only fail to plan. And you see, you didn't just wake up one day eating dog food. You got
right.
there with one dumb decision after another, and fighting people who were telling you to do better. You got there because you were told what to do differently. And you decided that, you know what, I got plenty of time, I got forever, I'm doing me over here. That's what you decide to do. And then you wake up one day and you realize that, whoa, I don't have enough, there's not enough time and enough abilities in front of me anymore to build the type of situation that I really need.
Yep.
That's what
Absolutely.
Actually happens. And it just feels like a freight train hit you one day. But no, that freight train's been running you over now for 20 years. When you were listening to the Black Channel and you turned off TBA and Professor Black Truth because what they were saying did not sound sexy enough because it was Saturday night and you wanted to find that hoe over there. And Professor Black Truth and TBA were talking about that money over there. And you were not interested in that. That didn't pique your interest. So you got there year after year with an ear that had a taste, if you can wrap your mind around that little analogy. Your ear has a taste for coonery and buffoonery and foolishness and frivolity. Your ear has a taste for that. You got a taste for that kind of thing. And we have to struggle and fight to get you to care about this. But the people who are most interested in black empowerment are the people that it's not going to do them any good anymore. The people who are most mm-hmm. interested and most paying attention to their money are the elderly. You go to a neighborhood with a bunch of broke old black people, and they know every penny that they got in their pocket. They know every penny that's in their house. Okay, but 20 years ago, we couldn't get you to give a damn about building wealth. Today, you know where every dime is, but then again, you ain't got that many dimes. It's not that hard to keep up with. We have a situation where our people want to get smart when they no longer have options, instead of making getting smart their first option.
And no one's there the whole time, you know, to say anything to them. We should have so many more influences out there, and we don't. And that's another thing that freaks me out with, you know, and even if for a man chasing that hoe over there is their thing, if you had power, wealth, and influence, you wouldn't even have to chase. You know, so it's like, my God, everything is right in front of you. You know, the knowledge is there. I don't understand why. You know what it is, I think? I think it's that it takes a lot of effort and energy to change. And people are very resistant to that. So it's just more easy and comfortable to just continue the way you're living and not have to work, you know, as hard as you could to attain more, because you're still getting all the that hose over there anyway. So what's the point?
Now, in that dovetail off of what you just said there, I mean, you've got a situation where Donald Sterling had enough money that he found a black female who don't like black people. So ain't that amazing? You've got enough wealth that you say, I don't like black people. And you've got enough wealth that you can find a black female who's like, hey, I don't like them either. Now, isn't that something? When you've got enough money that you can not like black people, and you find a black woman who sits there and don't like them either, you don't have to chase them when you got power, wealth. When you got power, wealth, and influence, you can get them custom made to order. I mean,
no, it reminds me of that old. It doesn't remind you of that old joke that Eddie Murphy told, where he said, "I got to be careful talk about Michael Jackson because he's got enough money to kill me and keep my mama quiet."
Hey, when you got it like that, you can just get it made to order. And what I'm saying is that we need to get it like that. Because that was a young woman. She knew, hey, this guy is bat crap crazy. He's out of his mind. I better grab some money before somebody legally goes after me. Well, that wound up happening anyway. And now they're in a situation where they could, with billions, she's up against billions of dollars now, not millions. Let me tell you, V. Stiviano's in a very bad situation because it was Mrs. Sterling who filed a lawsuit against her in the first place. And now Ms. Right. Sterling has $2 billion cash. She's got $2 billion in cold cash money. Baby, she can really just afford now at this point to just put her all lawyers on autopilot. And just let them chase your ass around for fun. I mean, she really just set them on autopilot like heat seekers, and they will just, all they got to do is let the checks just keep clearing. And with $2 billion, your grandchildren will have grandchildren before their money runs out. For the lawyers. At this point right now, they will bankrupt the state government before you bankrupt her lawyers. That is what power, I mean, isn't it? And by the way, you want to talk about power, wealth, and influence. So the wife, V. Stiviano is concerned with being the mistress. The wife, however, is the executor and the sole trustee of the Sterling Family Trust. And it is not Donald Sterling that owned the team, per se. It is actually the Sterling Family Trust that owned the Clippers up a few hours ago. And the sole trustee was Shelly Sterling.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Donald had a team and a bunch of money, and he now has neither control of the team nor the money. V. Stiviano was the side piece. But Mrs. Sterling, who understands the ways and the means of power, wealth, and influence, she really just got finished blowing the head off of Donald and his mistress. I wonder how many people realize that. Mrs. Sterling got the last laugh. Because Donald got enough sense to know that his wife just took the team from him. And V. Stiviano's got enough sense to understand that this woman can come after me now till the end of time. That is what power, wealth, and influence can do. I wonder how many people understand that. That's what it does.
And white women seem to understand these concepts better than we do. You know, you always see when there's a billionaire divorce or something to that effect, you know, It just always seems like the white women just know how to play the game. Not even a game. I don't know how to explain it. They know, I guess, how to just sit back and let their man be successful without interfering in some kind of way, because they know they're going to get a big chunk out of it if they just play their role. For some reason, we don't know how to do that. We either have to intervene or be nosy or yell and scream or want attention, and we screw ourselves out of a lot.
But the reason for that is because they come from a society where they understand, a woman's place. They spent the last four decades subsidizing black women being the most ignorant harpies on the planet. That is what white supremacy has done through their ghettos and their housing. And it's a situation where they have cultivated you to be the kinds of females who are completely and totally incapable of holding on to power, wealth, and influence. Like I said before, you don't plan to fail, you just fail to plan. No black female thinks that she's going to wake up one morning being dirt-ass poor. Nobody plans on that. And you see, for non-black women, the bottom line is they ain't trying to die broke. They're not trying to die broke. And what they do is they do what is necessary to stay next to power, wealth, and influence. Black women do not really have a concept of how you comport yourself or behave yourself or compose yourself to be able to do that. They don't really have a concept of that, and we don't do enough to teach our daughters that. Instead, our daughters think it's perfectly legitimate and perfectly acceptable to go broke if that's the way to get even with somebody. That's why you've got all these hoes in the NBA, and instead of them, if you're wrapping your legs around a ball player, you are supposed to be taking that. If that Negro ain't got enough sense to invest his money, you're supposed to wrap them thighs around him and go grab him by the nose and take him where he needs to go so that he can turn that $30 million into $300 million. But black women don't think that way. You see, when a white woman gets with a ball player in college, she already got her ideas on how he's going to turn that $1 million into $100 million. And she's going to be right there with a big-ass bag catching every dollar. She's like, yeah, make it rain, baby, because it's about to be raining real big here in a minute. And I mean to catch every damn dime of it. Ask Ivana Trump. Ask her. Ask Shelley Sterling. Hell, ask her. This man, y'all, we should be talking about Donald Sterling has lost everything. That man ain't lost a damn thing. Now we realize that he ain't lost nothing. And guess who is going to coast on it for the rest of her days? Shelley Sterling may not be in as good a shape and look as good and a whole lot older than V. Stiviano, but guess who's going to... V. Stiviano drove the Ferrari. Guess who's going to get to keep it? Guess who's going to get to keep that son of a gun?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough ability to have these types of conversations with our daughters, that even if the guy you are with is not doing everything you want, the money will be there. Even if you do have to get divorced, make sure that you are getting divorced over something that's worth it.
Yeah.
I've met a lot of folk who had Alzheimer's, but I didn't meet anybody who was cheating on their wife. So what that tells me is that this was Donald's thing. Well, his wife was like, I'll be damned if I'm going to decapitate the gold deuce. I'm not doing that. He can do whatever he wants to. Yeah, that's right. You just signed this damn trust in mine. I mean, if you all saw the video that I posted, she actually took him to two neurologists, not one, but two neurologists who verified that he has Alzheimer's. And that was how she got her name as the sole trustee on the family trust. Soon as she found out he was a little off, baby, get in this damn car. Where are we going? To the hospital. I'm not sick. You got me. I'm not feeling bad. Oh, you about to have some real problems here in just a minute. She threw his ass in the limo and said, make a beeline for the hospital. And when that limo pulled up and fit, that was the last time Donald Sterling walked out with his own money. Mrs. Sterling said, you got lawyers, and I'm going to make sure I'm ready for them. And guess what? The lawyers were not able to prevent her from getting her hands on that trust now, were they?
Nope.
Now, here's another thing. Did she immediately get her hands on the trust and go off and go buy a bunch of Gucci and Louis? Like that basketball player whose wife then sat up here and took all his damn money after he died? A couple of $1 million and blew it all in 12 months. Children have nothing now.
It's a shame. Such poor money management.
Mommy, but
you know, we're not used to having anything, though.
Is that poor money management, or is that that you've been raised by your mothers like dogs?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We come from people who have nothing. So when we have something, we don't know what to do.
Yeah, but value system has nothing to do with money, though.
That's true.
I mean, system does not actually have – money has nothing to do with what you value. Hell, being a broke person can value money. So how is it that these folk here sitting up here saying, spend every dime you got on toys and trinkets that make me feel better? The reason that they go broke is because they're trying to figure out a way to fill that hole where their soul used to be. Shelly Sterling was trying to figure out how she can fill the biggest bank vault in town. She was like, understand that. When Donald Sterling bought the Clippers, he spent $12 million. You figure back then, Sterling must have been worth, what, $100 million? 30 years later, he's worth $1 billion, and she's there for every bit of it. Now, in one day, they went from $1 billion to $3 billion in a single day. When was the last time you heard a black person flip their money like that?
No, I don't think ever.
Drug dealers out here get shot and locked up. Can't flip their money twice. She just went from $1 billion to $3 billion. In one day. Forget a year. In a day. That is because her priority was flipping the money. Not buying red bottoms and lace fronts and hanging out with her friends at the club. You haven't heard anything about Shelly Sterling's friends, have you?
No.
You know why? Because when you're a woman who's got $1 billion, you ain't got no friends. Oh, I'm not supposed to say it like that. If you got $1 billion and you got five friends, you're an idiot. Because there's no way in the hell that you know five other women who got $1 billion. How many people do you know who are on your level when you got $1 billion? But you expect me to believe that you got five friends. No, you don't. You got five groupies. So if we teach our daughter, B. Stiviano, for whatever's going on in that mixed-up head of hers, she is indicative of the condition of black women today. Amazing she wants to talk down on black people. Baby, you ain't no better. You had some white senile sugar daddy. But I'm taking a look at your lifestyle, baby. You ain't come up. All that messing around with Donald Sterling she did, please tell me what she walked away with.
Nothing. We're always content being the side piece.
I can show everybody what Shelly Sterling walked off with. Can somebody show me what V. Stiviana walked off with? Attention. She walked
Jason,
off
can
with
I say one thing real quick?
Yes.
I'm going to say it like this. Is this phone on? V. Stiviana is talking about, well, I did all this, I did all that. You failed at what Nana Nicole Smith succeeded on. you couldn't even get to that level of intelligence. And I'll be the first to say it wasn't a lot there. You couldn't even pull off Anna Nicole Smith after she laid the blueprint for getting with the old man on his to assume my deathbed.
Now, is that not shameful? If you're going to be a gold digger, I mean, what does that tell you? White women are just kicking ass left and right. If you're going to be a gold digger, black women think they got game. And this is what I mean. It's pathetic to hear black people even talk about game because white folk are just schooling us left and right. And Nicole Smith gave you the prototype for how you become the world's greatest gold digger. And these Stiviana couldn't even figure out how to do that. But you know why? Because Sterling let her drive the Ferrari, which she's being sued about, by the way. He let her drive the Ferrari, and as long as she could get on Instagram with her Ferrari, which ain't even hers, by the way, as long as she could do that, she was happy. Hey, V, what do you own, control, and are passing down after this relationship with him? Nothing. All she has is the notoriety of being Donald Sterling's backseat hoe. And that's it. She's not even in the front seat. She never was. And we're not even teaching our daughters how. Black men, stop complaining about black women being gold diggers. They don't have enough savvy smarts to be gold diggers. You're just tricks with your money. Black women don't even have the cunning to be able to be gold diggers. So we need to stop using that word because we don't actually have any gold diggers in our society. Nobody knows how to do it. Not the men, damn sure not the women. They grab a few ghetto trinkets and go bopping down the road. That's it. Magic Johnson has enough money by the Clippers, but does not have enough money to invest in something else, you know, a higher yielding investment. You don't have that magic? Wow. Unreal. Unreal. And people, I want us to get smarter about that kind of thing. But it's going to start with us understanding that money counts. Money is important, and that we need to determine our national purpose for being. Because when you're not telling your children what their purpose is, that's how they end up being the world's dumbest gold digger. Ain't that right, Stiviana? That was like watching the Keystone Cops be a gold digger. The only thing she could do right was to turn on the recorder for one day. Congratulations, you blew your own head off. If he's got Alzheimer's, he's probably forgotten about 30 times that he told you to get the hell out of his house about 50 times. I mean, he probably tells her, go away every other day. All you got to do is come back in a couple of days. Hey, Don. Hey, B. How you doing? He don't remember nothing. And she couldn't even make that work for him. She is not versed in the ways of power, wealth, and influence. You have to be, understand something, Melissa. Understand this very well. You can't be a hoe and be a power broker. Hoes do not become power brokers. Hoes do not become movers of wealth. Only a lady becomes a mover of wealth. Hoes don't get that. Hoes just try to keep their heads above water. Hoes don't become movers of wealth. It doesn't work that way. So when she got next to wealth, all she could really think was cars and clothes, cars and clothes. And she thought, I'm in the money. She didn't try to get Sterling to sign off on anything. She wasn't even smart enough to get him to sign off on something. Alzheimer's or not, his attorney's got enough pull to be able to get him to sign off on something. Why come she couldn't? But she didn't know what to do. She didn't even know what to ask for. So if you all want to peep some real game out of this whole Donald Sterling experience, follow Shelly Sterling. Follow her. Keep your eyes on her and see how she locks things down. You might learn something. I'll let you all have the last word.
Black first.
My last word is, if you out there and you're looking to build your money, the IT world is opening up. One of the things that, I'll be quick, one of the things that happened as a result of 9/11 is they reduced the amount of people that could come into the United States and foreign countries. What they tried to do was try to create a bunch of call centers overseas in different countries. The problem is that people may have the knowledge, but their English is so horrid or their accent is so bad, it doesn't translate to a good telecommute experience across the water. Not to mention, any big significant weather pattern could cause the signal to go bad. That's left a hole that needs to be filled with an information technology, and we need to take advantage of it because much as I hate to say it right now, and I'm gonna say it, and it may offend people. A lot of these other areas that people are telling you to study, they ain't paying the money. Now, for example, you can go get your PhD, and I never talk anyone else from doing it. But I tell you what, you got a PhD, you're making $80,000-$90,000 a year, not bad money. You ain't been to college, you got full certification, you got a CCMP, you got a VMware, VCDX, just them two alone, you're an independent consultant making $200,000 to $400,000 a year. For one. Black first,
brother, thank you very much for joining us here, Professor Truth.
Folks, you got one or two choices in this world. It's either going to be power, wealth, and influence, or it's going to be powerlessness, poverty, and irrelevance. You can look at Boko Haram, what's happening over there in Africa, for a prime example of this. When you have to go to the people who enslaved your people to handle a small problem like that, that lets you know you're done. You're in serious, serious trouble. So what we're going to do is we get ourselves some power, some wealth, and some influence, and we will be unapologetic about it. Black first.
Tonight, brothers and sisters, I hope you understand that we spend most of our time as black people making excuses. Black women would rather debate you for hours about why it's okay for them to be obese than they would just spend 30 minutes in the gym and lose the weight. Black men would rather debate you for years about why money doesn't matter because it was created by Europeans, which is a lie, or why capitalism doesn't matter because they're super spiritually groovy, rather than to spend a few months and to cultivate some power, wealth, and influence. Black people have always got an excuse for staying where we are, rather than creating a plan to get where we need to be. I want you to let go of the excuses. Magic Johnson, if you or somebody listening to you right now out there is out there, brother, if you got access to $1 billion, why are you wasting it on an NBA team? There is so much more you could be doing. So much more. And for those of you who are watching Magic and shaking your head about him, the next question is, comes down to you. What are you going to do? Magic's done a little bit, but pardon the expression, he's taken his eye off the ball. The ball is power, wealth, and influence. If you can get the Clippers, great, but if you can get together $800 million, dude, we should be making some major moves right now. Why don't you and Tyler Perry get together? You want to open up theaters? He's already got a film company. Why are y'all not putting your heads together here? Between the two of you, couldn't you get together a couple of billion dollars between the two of you? Now, I didn't even give that one to all y'all. By the way, between the two of them, why is there not a synergy forming? Because we as black people believe that synergy is the sole domain of white people. We're still waiting for them to give us our marching orders. And I'm telling you, let that fallacy go. Let it go. But to get the word out, we're going to be the only ones who can do that. I know it's the weekend, but before you get turned up or turned down, why don't you get powered up? Go to our website, 7ammovie.com. If you've already contributed, we're coming up on the last days of the campaign. Contribute again. We're coming up on your last opportunity to be a part of this. Make your mark on history. Let's change the world. Don't get mad. Get involved. 7ammovie.com. That's 7ammovie.com. Let's make it happen, people. Stop watching. Start acting. And this concludes this broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.